Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy to get 20% off your first month of cognitive behavioural therapy, with weekly sessions online with a therapist, in addition to worksheets, a journal, meditation and yoga videos, and unlimited messaging. There's strong evidence that CBT can help people who hoard, and accessing therapy online can be affordable and accessible. Find out more and get your discount at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Now on Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critic's pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune in a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny. Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People on Broadway through June 16th only.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep as somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all of my social media at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I am just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. Hey, how are you? I hope you're doing all right. I am okay. Today, I am going to talk about curiosity, the power it can have that I am learning all the time through trying to apply it. And obviously, in particular, in relation to hoarding and de-hoarding and all of those complex issues that we're all here to talk about. So I am at heart a planner. I am happiest when I know exactly what's going to happen, when and where and how and why, and I make a plan and I do the thing. I also am a person who lives in fear of making mistakes. I give myself a really hard time when I make mistakes, and I hate feeling like I've messed up. And those two things combine to having a tendency to stick a bit too rigidly to ideas and to ways of doing things. And the problem with that is that I stick with those ideas and ways of doing things even when they are not serving me, even when they're not working in my life. And that can be that it's something that used to work for me but doesn't anymore because, you know, we all grow and change, our lives change. Or it might be something that I just thought would work and ended up not doing. And if you are, like me, a kind of a planner and a person who avoids making mistakes, it's hard to say, I need to course correct, because that involves like an implied, I've been making a mistake, and it involves an implied, my plan is not good enough. It feels safe to stick to a plan. You know where you are. If you change course partway, that feels a bit vulnerable, a bit like admitting you were wrong. And it's not so much admitting you were wrong, like in front of somebody else, but to yourself. And that's hard. I have a friend who I've honestly learned so much from, because we're both quite opinionated, you'll be not surprised to hear. But she, for as long as I've known her, she will hear like a different perspective and occasionally go, do you know what? I used to think this, but having listened to you, I realized I was wrong before, and actually you're right, or that person's right. And she so readily changes course when there's good reason to. And I used to look on in wonder as she did it and think, how does her self-esteem survive that? Saying, I believed one thing really strongly, and I've heard other perspectives now, and I believe something different. But what I started trying to do was kind of model myself on her a bit in much smaller ways. I couldn't be as bold about it as she was, but just trying to acknowledge that things can change, and you can, when you learn something new or hear somebody's perspective, your outlook on the world can change, and that can change a lot of things. And I'm a lot better now. I've known her a long time. I'm a lot better in general at saying when I've made a mistake. If I make a mistake at work, I actually find it less stressful to just be honest and say, sorry, folks, I messed up here, than to sit wondering if I'm going to be found out. That for me is a lot more stressful. And also, I am a lot more able to say, oh, I didn't know that. That changes my perspective. And that, I feel like, is good growth as a human. But with the way I do things in my home, it hadn't trickled down that far. And I just kept getting stuck. I would try and de-hoard. I would go, right, I need a plan to de-hoard the bathroom. And I would think and think and think and come up with a plan in my head. And it would usually be many stepped and many layered. And I would wait until the entire plan, start to finish, was fully formed in my head before taking any action. And then I would start to take action with my clear plan in my head. And what would invariably happen would be a step or two into this plan, it wouldn't be quite working for me. There would be something I hadn't anticipated, or something that was harder than I'd thought it would be, or some practicality that I couldn't work out. And what I would do is I would go, okay, that plan doesn't work, scrap the entire thing and start again from scratch with the very cerebral working it all out in my head. And only a year or two ago, I had a full-on revelation when I realized that what I could do is, if I still feel the need to come up with an entire plan beforehand, I can still do that. But when I start trying to implement the plan, if something isn't going as I imagined, I don't have to scrap it all and start again. I can adapt as I go. I can course correct. I can say, I thought it would help best if I did it this way. Actually, now I've started, I see it's a bit more complex than I thought, or there's more than I thought, or something like that. And actually, it would be more effective to do it this way instead. And that has been kind of life-changing for me. I know it sounds daft for something that most people, I think, just do. But for somebody who sticks so rigidly to plans, which is absolutely like a safety mechanism, it helps me to manage my anxiety, it helps me to manage all kinds of things if I feel like I know exactly what's going to happen. But it's one of those coping mechanisms that becomes an obstruction of its own. It starts limiting you rather than liberating you. So I've been working on that. And then on top of that as well, I had CBT for hoarding disorder. And one of the big things I learned was my CBT therapist would kind of set me a task of something I was going to try and do between sessions. I mean, we would agree to one. It wasn't like she imposed something. We'd come up with a plan for something I was to do between sessions. And at first, this would make me very, very anxious. So the plan might be get one bag a day out of the house. And I would immediately go into, what if I can't? What if it's too hard? What if this? What if that? What if the other? And there was something about the way she framed these tasks that made them so much more doable. And that was that it wasn't a task. It wasn't homework. It wasn't something I had to achieve. It was an experiment. And there's something about that being an experiment rather than a definite task that is quite freeing, because if something's an experiment, you can't really fail at it. You can only find out if that's the right approach or not. And the thing with experiments is if they don't work, people then look at different ways to try and achieve the same thing. So I could go into my week's homework from CBT thinking, well, okay, my job is to try and get a bag out every day, but this is an experiment. So it's about trying to do it and observing what happens and then reassessing based on what I observe and based on my experiences of doing it. And so it wasn't a pass or a fail. It wasn't an achieve or a not achieve. It was kind of something I was observing and testing out. Now, that leads to the whole concept of curiosity, which I see as basically a different way of framing this experiment idea. And it's something that Dr. Jan Eppingstall, regular guest, talks about a lot, about how going into tackling hoarding with an attitude of curiosity is, it takes a lot of the fear and power away from trying to tackle a hoard, because instead of, oh no, I've got to go in that room, you can try and frame it in your mind as, oh, I wonder what will happen when I take the lid off this box. I wonder what's under that pile. I wonder how I'll feel if I can get rid of 3 whole bags of clothes. And it's suddenly a different issue. It's not a matter of, oh no, what do I have to do? It's a matter of, let's see what happens if. And so over the last few years, as I've been trying to embrace being less rigid, as I've been trying to learn how to course correct rather than scrap and start again, as I've been trying to learn how to treat things that intimidate me as an experiment, and as I've been trying to approach things with an attitude of curiosity, it's genuinely making a difference in both my de-hoarding and also my understanding of my own situation. Because if a task is scary, I'm just scared. Whereas if I'm curious as I go about it, I can start to examine, what is it that's scaring me? Why does this task feel intimidating? Why do I feel really anxious at the prospect of dealing with this room? And I'm learning all the time about my own thoughts and my own behaviours and my own patterns. So I thought I would dedicate this week's episode to curiosity in all its forms, really, and the benefits of it as we tackle this really confusing mental health problem. And so the thing about curiosity is when you're curious, you are the kind of person who seeks out new information, looks for new perspectives, asks questions. And all of those things are really good qualities for a person to have. A person who is asking questions and seeking out new information is somebody who's always learning and growing. And that can be learning facts and it can be growing as a person. It's not all about information. Sometimes it's just about personal growth. And the more curious we are and the more knowledge we seek, the better understanding we get of the world around us, whether that's looking up, why do narwhals have a big tusk? How did it evolve that? And actually finding out rather than just wondering every time one pops up on a wildlife program, whether it's being curious about what it is about the post coming through the door that gives you such terror, whether it's being curious about what on earth is in that cupboard that's been behind boxes for so long that I can't even picture it, or whether it's being curious about what are other hoarders' experiences of hiring a hoarding clearance firm, what are professional perspectives on shame. All of those wonderings, all of that curiosity leads us to expand our horizons, basically. We learn, we get new ideas, we get new information, we start to absorb new concepts and ways of looking at the world. And this is a really kind of fulfilling and enriching way of approaching life, to be honest.
Now on Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critic's pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune in a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny. Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People on Broadway through June 16th only.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support. 100% online. You'll experience the all new Cerebral way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way, so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code ACAST to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
The listener voicemail segment has a monthly theme to help you think of something to say. So for July, the question to answer is, what is a lesson you've learned recently? Maybe you've learnt that avoiding certain shops helps you to keep your acquiring under control, or that the world doesn't end if you run out of something you thought you needed. This is your opportunity to share your learnings with us. Have your say with your voice. If you want to record a voice message to me to potentially play on a future podcast episode, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail and leave a message. The topic for July is a lesson you've learnt recently. Let us know what you're thinking at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail. Curiosity also helps us to solve problems more effectively. When we are dealing with a challenge or a problem or an unexpected or unfamiliar situation, if we approach that with curiosity, we start exploring potential solutions. If we approach it with panic, we shut down and do the minimum or go into denial or react against it. When we approach problems with curiosity, we start thinking, not necessarily more clearly, it's more like more critically. We are able to be a bit more objective about our options and a bit more objective about the situation we're dealing with, because we can start to analyze our options a bit better. And when we're thinking that way about problems we're facing, I think often that's when we get quite creative with our thinking as well. If you approach a problem with the half-hearted solution you've always used that you know isn't brilliant, then you might kind of muddle through, but it's not ideal. If you approach a problem with a mind that's open to learning, then creativity starts to kind of flood your brain and you start thinking, maybe I could do it like this. I wonder what would happen if I did it like that. I wonder what would happen if is kind of key to a lot of this. Because if we wonder what would happen if, then we might try that and it might open up a whole new world for us. I cooked some food the other day that I know I like eating, but I've always been scared to cook. It's a long story. Mainly, it's just one of those really confusing foods that is available in a lot of different forms and can be cooked in so many different ways that I've no idea how it works. But if I am fed it at a restaurant or at a friend's house, I really like it. And the other day, I thought, do you know what? I'm just going to try and cook it. And the worst thing that will happen is it's inedible and I won't eat it. And I cooked it. And it was nice. I did it. I cooked the food. I've wanted to know how to cook for about 30 years. And that was because I shook off the, I don't know how to cook tofu. It was tofu. That was like a rule. I like tofu, but I don't cook it. Full stop. And I shook that off and replaced it with, I wonder what will happen if I follow this particular recipe I've just found. I wonder what will happen. And when it's an I wonder what will happen situation, it's not a pass or fail. It's not a win or lose. It's just, I wonder what will happen. And what happened was tasty tofu. And I'm not saying that the number of options with tofu are not overwhelming, but I feel like now I have one type of tofu that I know how to cook. And that's only, literally only because I was able to switch from my fixed, I don't know how to do this position, to a more open, curious, let's see what happens if situation. And it's that kind of open mind that is a theme throughout everything that curiosity has to offer, because being curious just does open up new possibilities. You explore new ideas and you learn new information, and that can lead you to new experiences and even new people. And if you approach those new people with an attitude of curiosity, you'll be genuinely interested in them and will ask insightful questions. And that is the potential for the beginning of a really good communication and a really good relationship. And the more curious you are about the world, about yourself, about your living situation, the more possibilities open up to you. If you're open to those new experiences and new perspectives, it helps you kind of edge out of your comfort zone a bit, because you're not saying, I've got to go skydiving. You're saying, I wonder what would happen if I did a new yoga class. It doesn't have to always be dramatic. You can be curious bit by bit, which is very much my thing. I am not a believer for myself in flinging myself out of my comfort zone and making myself deal with it. I'm a lot more comfortable with slowly nudging the edges of my comfort zone to just widen it gradually, and then I acclimatise for a bit, and then I nudge those boundaries open a bit further, and then I acclimatise for a bit. And curiosity is absolutely helping me with that. And as you are more curious and you're learning new skills and you're meeting new people and you're learning new information, you might discover whole new passions and interests that you didn't know you had. And that's a powerful thing. We've all got things that interest us more and things that interest us less. But what if somewhere inside you there's a passion for learning about how to identify trees from their leaves, or there's a passion for a particular author that you've currently never heard of, or there's a passion for a band or a type of music that you currently know nothing about, but through curiosity and asking questions and getting a little bit out of your comfort zone, you just don't know what's out there that you might suddenly love. It might be that in 3 years' time, I'm cooking every type of tofu in every different way, all because the other day I braved that first attempt and it went well. The other thing, and this relates a lot to what I was saying earlier, and it relates a lot to people who hoard, and that is that the more curious you are, the more likely you are to develop the skills of adaptability and flexibility. And I do think they are skills. And the thing about skills is that we can practice them and we can learn them. We don't have to have them at the start to develop them. And the world we live in is changing all the time. Think about older people who are bewildered by technology that younger people are completely at home with. And that's because it's new and it's changing, and they might have lived 60 years before mobile phones were invented, or they might have lived 70 years before they got their first iPad. And adapting and learning, it's not just the ability to adapt and learn, but the willingness to adapt and learn opens horizons. We can embrace change better when we're curious. And that might be embracing change in the wider world. It might be that your job role changes. It might be that your friendship circle changes, or your kids move out, or any of that kind of change. Might also be changes specifically relating to hoarding. It might be that your stuff feels like such a security blanket that you can't imagine ever getting rid of it. And then you get to a point where you've done a lot of work on yourself and you start to think, maybe the mounds of stuff are holding me back rather than protecting me. And at that point, you've kind of got two options. One is that you can be rigid and you can stick to, no, it's a security blanket. That's how I've always understood it. The piles of things protect me. That's that, full stop. Or your other option is to be curious about that shift in your thinking and think, that's really interesting. I've always felt it was a security blanket. And maybe it has functioned as that for a really long time, but that's not to say that's how it always feels. And I'm starting to think maybe it feels more like something that's weighing me down. And that's really interesting. And I wonder what I could do differently to reflect this new realization. And I wonder how it would feel if I started trying to do this small little change. And that agility, that ability to change direction, even slightly, is made so much easier if you're approaching it with an open, curious, experimental mindset than if you dig your heels in and say, no, it has always been a certain way and it always will be. And I mentioned earlier that curiosity, it can open you up to more creative solutions. And I think the thing with it is you're just more open to thinking outside the box when you're approaching things experimentally and curiously. And you're looking for information and you're looking for input or perspectives. And that can inform a really creative, innovative way of looking at your world and your situation. You're seeing things from different perspectives. And if you're approaching the whole world with more curiosity, you're probably more accepting of different people with different ideas. You're maybe more accepting of yourself, which is so fulfilling. And you're also probably a more interesting person to be around and a more interesting person for you in your own head. When everything is always the same or everything is always done just so, there's not a huge amount to think about. If you're learning new things, if you're trying new things especially, you've got new stories to tell, you've got new perspectives to discuss, you've got new ideas that you're trying out. And that can be a more interesting life to live, and it can be a more interesting life to tell other people about, because you've got more insight into the world rather than the very set ideas you had before you started trying to open up to curiosity a bit. Connections are just, I think, deeper and more profound when that's your outlook. And so it's all very well saying curiosity's great, be more curious. But it's not always obvious to know how. How do you do that? I read an article earlier that said, what was it? Cut back on your stress or something, as if you could just do that. And so I don't want to do that and just go, okay, so there you are, be more curious. So I've been looking into, it sounds weird, but ways to kind of feed that curiosity part of you that encourages it to come out a bit. And I think a good place to start, in my experience, is with that concept of treating things as an experiment. I think if you've got a task that you're putting off or that you're dreading or that you're worried you'll get wrong, see whether you can frame it or frame part of it as an experiment. See whether you can say to yourself, instead of, oh no, I've got to tackle the stairs, say, I'm going to have a go at the stairs and see what happens. Or I'm going to start at the bottom of the stairs and see how far up I can go. Or I'm going to start at the top of the stairs because I'm really curious about what is in that pile of clothes. Incidentally, it is important, if at all possible, to keep your stairs clear of stuff for safety reasons. So another way to encourage curiosity in your life is just ask questions. If you see something you don't understand, if you hear someone say something and you don't quite get it, ask them or Google something. That's how you can find out why on earth narwhals have massive tusks. Are they called tusks? The big spike, anyway. Or if someone says, I believe X and you believe Y, you might say, oh, that's interesting. How, can you tell me a bit about that? Because I've never heard that point of view. and you're not going, how on earth, how dare you believe X, justify yourself. You're saying, oh, I'm quite interested to hear more because I haven't heard that perspective before. So ask questions of yourself as well. If you are panicking and saying, I definitely can't do any work in the second bedroom, curiosity can apply to saying to yourself, what is it about the second bedroom that makes me feel it's absolutely impossible? What's going on there? And you can also increase your curiosity in terms of your understanding of your own hoarding thoughts and patterns of and behaviours by having therapy. Therapy is a great way to explore those questions and to not just get answers, but to learn to sit with the fact that it's okay for a question to not have an answer or not have an answer yet. It's something that you might ask or your counsellor might ask, and your conclusion might be, I don't know. And that's okay. That certainty is appealing, but uncertainty is not as terrifying and unbearable and impossible to deal with as we might initially think it is. Another way to try and be more curious as you go about the world is try to not rule out the possibility of new experiences kind of by default. If somebody suggests going to eat a kind of food that you've never eaten before, don't automatically say, oh, I don't like spicy food or whatever it is. Stop yourself and say, maybe I should try it. Maybe Thai food is the passion I haven't yet learnt that I have. And maybe it's an opportunity to Google some questions and to ask your friend, oh, what is it about that restaurant that you like so much? What's your favourite dish? And do you think I would like it, given that I like garlicky things, but I'm not so keen on this? It opens up communication. It opens up your learning. And it opens up your mind to curiosity and new things. And I think part of that is allowing yourself to challenge the beliefs you've already got and challenge any assumptions you have. I probably won't like Thai food. That's an assumption that may be correct, but you will not know until you try some. And indeed, you will not know probably until you've tried it several times. Like if somebody has one burger and they don't like it, it wouldn't be reasonable for them to say, I hate American food, because they've tried one type of American food made by one person. And similarly, you know, the first Thai curry you might have, you might not love, but number two or number three might be the best thing you've ever eaten. Maybe if you always go for a walk in the same park, have a look around for other parks in the area. Ask your neighbours, what's your favourite park to go and have a walk in? That opens up communication and it opens up your world a bit. And if your experience is the same as mine, then opening up your own world in one respect opens it up in others as well. If I'm brave enough to tackle a room I've been avoiding for 6 months, then I feel a little bit like, yay. And that might mean that the next day I'm brave enough to cook tofu. And being brave enough to cook tofu emboldens me a bit more. And that might mean that the next day I'm brave enough to go on holiday. It doesn't all have to be hoarding related. I really believe that embracing curiosity in one part of your life, whether that's reading a type of novel that you've never read before, or whether it's Googling what jobs can you do with these qualifications, just to see that you may have other options, that kind of curiosity carries over into other areas of your life. And so you start off being brave and curious in one area and it fans out across wider areas of your life. And creativity is another great way to embrace the power of curiosity, especially if you don't generally think of yourself as an arty person or as somebody who's very creative. If you can shake off the need to produce something good, whatever that means, and instead just go, I wonder what happens if I mix these two colour paints, or I wonder if I still remember how to sew, and try and enjoy the process rather than get hung up on what you get at the end. That can be really freeing, and it allows you to experiment in a really safe, controlled way without taking risk, but just prove to yourself that you can do things differently and you can do new things. And you can express yourself in a way that nobody else can. Talking to people with different backgrounds and different histories and different life stories is also a really good way to kind of fan your curiosity flame. I think there's something so valuable about meeting people with a completely different life story to you and having a conversation that shows that in many ways you're completely the same and in other ways you're completely different, and that applies with any two people on the face of the earth. And maybe you could start volunteering somewhere an afternoon a week, and you could work with school children to help them to learn to read, or you could work with a refugee group to help people learn English or whatever your language is, or you could work in a soup kitchen or a food bank and get chatting about people who are living in poverty or people who don't have a home. And you can meet people from around the world, and there are always new things to learn. And that it's very leveling just sitting down and having a cup of tea and a conversation with somebody who you might never have spoken to otherwise. And you might well come out of it with new ideas or new inspiration. And I think if you already have some interests, a good place to start with embracing curiosity is start with those, but try and delve deeper into them. Say you are fascinated by elephants. If you've listened for a long time, you know that I'm quite fascinated by elephants. So say you're fascinated by elephants and you know that, and you've watched all the elephant documentaries and you've read some books on elephants. What you can do from there is look at, what do elephants eat? And how does that grow in the desert? And start looking at that. Or you could look at, which parts of the world do elephants live in? What can I learn about those countries or those environments? Or what animals live side by side with elephants, and what can I learn about them? And that can be a good way, if you're really not sure what you're curious about, starting with something you already know you have a fascination with is a good way to engage your brain and engage yourself. And it also struck me that mindfulness can be a really good way to approach curiosity, almost from a different direction. Because I think when you practice mindfulness, you can start looking at the details of things you might not pay attention to. If you're on the bus to work and you're on the same bus every day and it's tedious and it's cold and you've got a tough day ahead of you, it's easy to just sit and stew. But if you're on the bus to work and you start paying attention to the upholstery on the bus, all the different hairstyles of all the different people on the bus, you're really slowed down. You're really present in the moment and you're observing both yourself and your surroundings, really kind of engaged in what you can see and what you can hear and what you can feel and what you're thinking. It can lead to a real curiosity about the world around you. And the final way, I think, that helps with nourishing an attitude of curiosity is probably the hardest one. And that is trying to learn from your mistakes. Learn that it's okay to make mistakes and that when you do make a mistake, you can either berate yourself, tell yourself you're a terrible person and vow to never try anything new again, or you can be curious about what went wrong. You can really delve into it, look at it, but dispassionately, not as a way to beat yourself up even further, but as a way to learn and as a way to grow. It's when you feel safe to make mistakes, because you feel safe to explore and you feel safe to learn, that curiosity is really cultivated. Ultimately, curiosity is powerful. And with all of the benefits that people can gain from a more curious outlook and a more curious approach to life, it's a skill that it's really worth working on. It's a skill that it's really worth strengthening. Even if it starts from a tiny, tiny seed, it's got to start somewhere. And you can be curious about the process of becoming curious as part of your overall approach to tackling hoarding and as part of your just growth as a wonderful human being. I make this podcast because I think it's important. I started it as an outlet for myself, but it's become much more than that. And I hear from people all the time about how listening to me talk about my experience and interview specialists and experts is helping them. Hearing those stories makes the time and cost absolutely worth it. But if you want to help to ensure that the future of the podcast is sustainable, you can donate to help with costs. To send a one-off or recurring donation, just go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/donate. Thank you. So my top tip this week is a clip from the Learning Leader Show with Ryan Hawke, which I will link to in the show notes. And the person speaking is James Clear, who is a very wise man, especially when talking about habits. But in this instance, he's talking about people who see problems and at what point in a process that is useful and at what point it is obstructive. Have a listen to this.
Some people are problem solvers and other people are problem adders. So you come to somebody with an idea and some people immediately they start thinking about what can I do to contribute to this? How can we figure that out? How can we wrestle with reality and make this work? And then other people spend all their time telling you about why it won't work or why it's not a good idea. The first thing they see is not the opportunity of the idea, but all the pitfalls that could come in the future. And my thing is like, listen, I will wrestle with reality. It's just like, at what point do you need to do that? So in the beginning, we're trying to come up with ideas that are interesting, useful, valuable, actionable. And then like at that point, your job is not to be your own bottleneck. Early on in the process, like your job is to just come up with like, what would the magical outcome be? What would the awesome outcome be? Let's start there and then work backwards from magic, you know? And as you start that process of working backwards from magic and what that amazing outcome would be, you're forced into solving problems that arise along the way. But if you do it in that direction, then you only have to solve the problems that actually exist, that you actually face. If you start by generating a bunch of problems that could potentially happen, now you're solving problems and thinking about things that you may not even have to deal with. And so would you rather be more prepared in some cases for things that won't actually happen? Or would you rather be less prepared and then deal with the problems that arise along the way?
And as somebody who definitely looks at potential avenues and sees problems first, this is definitely something I'm going to give some thought to. Okay, thank you for listening, and I will speak to you next time. Thank you for listening to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. You can find more online at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at That Hoarder and on Facebook at Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder. To find out more about how you can support the podcast and the overall project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support and do subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. There may be links in this podcast that earn me money. This doesn't come at any extra cost to you if you ever make a purchase through the links, and it helps to support the future of the podcast.
Now on Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critic's pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune in a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny. Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People on Broadway through June 16th only.
This summer, you need clothes that you can wear anywhere. For that, look to American Giant t-shirts, shorts, jeans, and sweatshirts. American Giant makes everything in the USA, so when you buy, you create jobs and improve local communities all across the country. Shop summertime closet staples at American-Giant.com and get 20% off your order when you use code WA23 at checkout. That's 20% off at American-Giant.com with promo code WA23.